action.
Hey there, movie kings and queens. Welcome to episode 22 of the Real Game Movie Show. I'm your host, Mike Lovins, and with me is the guy who spells feature with a PH, my co-host, Ryan Provost.
What?
Because when you go to see two movies, you brag about going to a DP.
No. I don't like this. Okay. That was weird. What happened?
I don't know. I told you it was going to bomb.
It's fine. Leave it in. Leave it in. Just accept it. You know? Not all these episodes can be winners, Mike. Still waiting for one that is.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
So how you doing, Ryan?
I was doing great.
You were.
I'm doing great. Doing wonderful. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good. I'm yeah.
Mike's a little sleepy because he went to another concert last night.
I did. I went and saw Panic at the Disco.
Yeah. With that pansexual.
Yeah, that's right.
Brendan Urie.
Yeah. He's pretty.
He's the pansexual. He likes everything in the pan.
That's what he says this week.
All the pans.
Yeah. Including the wok.
Stop.
So we are doing kind of a special episode this week. We're reviewing two movies.
Yeah, Mike and I saw a lot of movies this last week. A lot.
That might contribute to some of the tiredness. But for the most part, it was a good trip to the theater.
Many trips. I actually saw four movies this week. Mike saw three, right?
Yeah.
So
we can't all have your stamina.
No. No. Few can.
So we're going to skip the newsreel this week.
Yeah, and just get to some thoughts on some movies.
Yeah. So before we get into the deep dives of the two main movies that we're going to talk about, let's discuss a little bit what else was seen.
Okay. Do you want to do the one we both saw first or the one only I saw first?
Let's start with the one that only you saw.
Okay. So I saw the fourth film in a franchise that I have I've enjoyed going to see. They're not my favorite, but every year when they come out, I just happen to go. And I saw the first Purge.
So what?
Which is
think?
Actually the fourth the Purge, fourth. But it's about the first Purge. It's kind of like Star Wars,
right?
This is episode
all comes
one.
Back around.
The Phantom Purge. So I actually did not want to see this movie. I'm kind of purged out, but a friend of mine was like, we wanted to hang out, and a lot of times when we hang out, we go to a movie, and he said, hey, let's go to a movie. And I think people underestimate just how many movies I see because of this podcast now.
Right.
So he was like, well, let's go see Ant-Man. Well, I've already seen Ant-Man. The episode just came out.
He goes, go listen.
Right. And he suggested one or two others. I'm like, seen it. And then we finally settled on The Purge. So I'll go see the first Purge. So we went, and like I said, I've seen all four of them. And I gotta say, this one actually might be my favorite.
Really?
It actually was decent for what it is.
So I've yet to see a Purge.
Okay.
And I was actually thinking about seeing this one.
So the original Purge plays more like kind of a home invasion horror movie.
Yeah.
And then in the second and third ones, they really lean into the, okay, let's get out of just this one confined house and really explore what the world is in this larger context. With this last one, the third one, being very heavy on...
Was that the election year?
Yeah, election year.
Yeah.
Being very heavy on kind of the message, it was the like political and societal message it was trying to get across.
That was right around the time of our election, right?
Correct. It was a year ago.
Yeah.
This one also very much leans into some of the societal commentary, but does a much better job of balancing being partially a horror movie, partially an action movie, and partially there's one character named Dolores who is hilarious. Like, finally The Purge has a really great kind of comedic,
okay,
comedy relief kind of character. She's really funny every time she's on screen. You laugh, and I feel like this is the first movie that didn't take itself too seriously, and through that character, through some of the decisions they made, it tried to have a little more fun than maybe the first three of these movies did. And so I think it really found the tone that these movies need to have. So I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and would rate it pretty high for what I think The Purge is capable of.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it 2.5 reels.
Okay.
Because, I mean,
it's a purge.
It's The Purge. Yeah. So it's not getting in that high territory, but I had some fun. Can't complain.
Now, are you looking forward at all to the Purge TV show that's coming out?
So in the mid credits, their mid credit scene, that's what they did. They teased the TV show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In the mid credit scene. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
which I thought was a really interesting way to promote that was, yeah, the credits stop and you think it's going to make credit scene, it's the like a preview for the show.
Okay.
I don't know. Probably won't watch it.
It seems weird to me to turn that concept of what's supposed to be a night into a TV show.
Now, Rick and Morty, a show that I love, did an episode where Rick and Morty go to a planet that has a purge concept, and it's actually a really funny episode. I would recommend that over any other purge properties.
Okay.
but yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good little fun movie.
All right, well, maybe I will check that one out then.
Wait till it comes out.
I was gonna say I'm not sure if I'll waste one of my AMC credits on it.
Nah, but, not necessary.
All right, so that's number one of four. So number two, we both saw.
We've both seen the rest of these that we're going to talk about. Yeah.
So Won't You Be My Neighbor?
No. Oh, you were talking about the movie.
I was talking about the movie, but now that I know how you really feel.
Well, in all fairness, you live very far away from the places I frequent.
I know, because I'm a suburb gay.
Yeah, you're living that suburban life.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't at me.
Anyway, yeah, so right. What did you think of Won't You Be My Neighbor? Or were you a big Mr. Rogers fan as a kid?
I wouldn't say I was a big Mr. Rogers fan as a kid, but I definitely watched it a lot, just being in daycare and stuff like that. I was very familiar with the show. I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. I'm amongst the majority, I think, but you kind of hinted that you might have a different outlook on the movie.
Just took a big sip of my rosé because I'm going to give what I've realized is a very unpopular opinion of this movie. I even saw on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's at 99%. So I am
that 1%. Yeah.
I don't know. I went to this movie with really high hopes. I really wanted to enjoy this movie. I remember Mr. Rogers. I wasn't a huge consumer of Mr. Rogers as a child, but was certainly aware of him and his deal. And truly was hoping to go into this movie and get all the warm, fuzzy feels and love it. And I gotta say, and I think part of it is because of how great I thought RBG was, the Ginsberg documentary we reviewed. I was underwhelmed. I really was. And here's why. I have a few reasons. Okay. One, I feel like the tone of the movie was a little awkward to me. I feel like they spent a lot of the movie trying to defend him. So, for instance, they talked a lot about people want to know if he was really like this in real life. And he was. Like, there were several people who were talking about that. They played Fox News clips of them saying, Mr. Rogers ruined a generation and made everyone think they're special. And then they defended him against that. And it's like, is his reputation under attack or something? Like, I felt like they were spending a lot of the movie defending him. And I don't feel like his character was ever necessarily in question.
I don't know. I can remember hearing those stories, though, of either he himself being accused of being gay, or the stories of, they kind of made light of this a little bit, but of him being a former in the military and,
yeah,
and, you know, a history of killing the enemy and stuff like that. But the stuff after he passed, and you know, the hate groups and stuff like that talking about him supporting gays and minorities and stuff like that, that he was going to hell for that. I can remember that stuff happening and following that. So I can see why it was put in there. And I think if you're putting that in there and talking about somebody's life like that, you're going to want to defend him in that. So
I guess, but I just wanted it to be maybe a little more uplifting and less, let's defend Mr. Rogers. And like I said, when we talked about RBG, some of my favorite aspects of that movie were the love story between her and her husband, and the moments with her and her family. And Fred Rogers' wife and kids were interviewed for this movie. Did they go over his relationship with his wife at all? Like how they met or what they're like, any of that? Not really.
I mean, they did touch on that she was there from the beginning, though.
Great. And they also talked a lot about his love for children in general. Did they talk much about, like, were there any fun anecdotes or stories about him being a father to his own children and things that they did that stood out at all?
You know, I mean, a few little things. Like, I remember them talking about how, like, he would use the voice of one of the puppets if he was going to say things that were very, that were like un Mr. Rogers like, and
I didn't feel like a very personal story to me. And I was hoping that it would be a little more personal, especially if one of the big takeaways of this movie was this man was in real life pretty much who you saw on the screen. They focused a lot on who he was on the screen, but they didn't really give me much of him in person other than to say, yeah, he was pretty much the same person. I don't know. I feel like narratively it felt a little flat for me.
See, now I disagree. Like when some of the folks that worked on the show would talk about him, you know, backstage or, you know, after the shows or whatever, kind of cutting up a little bit, and that guy talking about you know, taking pictures of his butt, and Fred had one of them blown up as a poster and given back to him as a gift, and you know, those stories to me were kind of what you're talking about, what you felt like you were missing.
I didn't feel that connection. Now, having said that, I did enjoy a lot of it. I did like how they talked about his views on gay people.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime I hear someone's a minister or something, I kind of wonder, like, oh, sure, they're full of love, but would they really be full of love for me? Well, and so hearing that side of things, I certainly appreciated that. Because I think that would have been something people would wonder. And I did like some of the, how they showed his personality through things he did on the show.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I was left wanting something different than what I got.
Okay. Well, there's that 1%.
Yeah. I'm the 1%.
You're in that group.
It's me.
And hey, it's all subjective.
Right.
You're allowed your opinion. But
I'm sad I feel that way. I wish I didn't.
I mean, it's wrong, but you're allowed your opinion.
So what would you rate Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I would give it 3.5 reels.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would give it 2.5.
Yeah.
2.5. Which is so sad because, so I give the first Purge and Won't You Be My Neighbor 2.5 reels, and I feel very differently about those movies. First Purge, I expected to be much worse, so I was excited to give it 2.5 reels. Won't You Be My Neighbor, I was so expecting it to be much better, and I'm very disappointed to give it 2.5 reels.
You know, in some ways, I think I may have even actually liked this one better than RBG.
No.
I rated them the same, but I think it's because I just, as a kid who, you know, did watch it at least a little bit, I guess I felt like I had a little bit more of a
maybe had more of that emotional connection. I just, narratively speaking, I think the structure of RBG tells a story that is very focused and flows in a way that makes sense. Whereas I feel like there was a bit of a lack of focus, and where the focus was in Won't You Be My Neighbor just wasn't where I wanted it to be.
Okay.
Yeah. Sad.
Sad. Wah, wah.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess let's go ahead and start talking about the first official movie of the show.
Okay.
What do you think? So
let's do it.
The first movie is Skyscraper.
Okay. So let's give you the lowdown, everyone. We fully went into this week saying this was the movie we're going to review. Skyscraper is the one. It's the big one coming out. We're doing it. We both saw the movie. In texting each other about this episode, came to the conclusion that we had words to say about the movie. We did not have many words to say about the movie. So, because of that, we decided to make this episode a little about Skyscraper and a little about the other movie we saw. So, we'll talk a little about Skyscraper. But don't worry, this isn't going to be like a 3-hour episode because we don't have much to say about this one. Right, Mike?
Correct. Yeah. So, basic synopsis in case people don't know what Skyscraper is. An American security consultant is hired to evaluate the safety of the world's tallest building in Hong Kong. While his family is alone inside, the building is set on fire and he must get inside and save them before it's too late.
Yep.
Bum, bum, bum.
Can we just give a spoiler alert at the beginning?
If you haven't seen Skyscraper and you plan to... First, I'm sorry.
You plan to
skip ahead to the next movie because, yeah.
There's no reason to beat around the bush.
We're not beating any bushes here. So, all right. So, obviously, the main cast, the two big stars really are Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
The Rock Dwayne
and Johnson. Neve Campbell.
Fun fact, at various points in my life, I have named my penis The Rock, Dwayne, and Johnson. So he really resonates with me.
That's awesome because I've named mine Nev and Campbell.
Yep.
Yep. That's where we went. So, you know, so this really is, they tried to make this a throwback movie to like the style of like the 90s action movies. In fact,
I think they're going for very much the Die Hard vibe.
They have flat out said this is their own homage to Die Hard.
Did they forget the part where Die Hard was good?
Apparently. I think that they did themselves a disservice by even mentioning the words Die Hard in the description of the making of this movie.
Yeah. Do you think they were just referencing what they thought people were going to be screaming at the screen while watching the movie?
Probably. Like, let's get out in front of them and say that we meant for this to be kind of a tribute to Die Hard. But it also kind of...
No, I meant, like, people angrily screaming, Die Hard,
Jesus.
Stupid movie. No, you... My joke was lost on you.
I'm
it's because it wasn't that good. We're going to move on. Keep saying
the
words.
The joke was like the movie.
Just keep saying words.
Yeah.
Say the words, Mike.
You're doing bad jokes and I'm drinking whiskey. So, you know, there's that.
Roles have reversed.
But parts of this movie kind of reminded me more than Die Hard, like the 70s disaster movies of like the towering Inferno, which you're giving me the look like you've never even heard of it.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
I mean, it's a building on fire, so right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Check.
So there you go. It's a towering inferno. That's what they should have called it. Towering skyscraper or inferno. Skyscraper inferno.
There you go.
Yeah. So I felt like I kind of enjoyed watching the movie while it was playing, but kind of in one of those like, this is bad kind of making, I'm having a good time watching a bad movie, but I'll never watch it again.
Yeah, this is very much the kind of movie that AMC A-List and MoviePass were built for, because otherwise I would have been so terribly angry that I saw this movie.
I'm sorry.
But because I didn't pay any additional dollars to see it than I would have otherwise, I'm fine. You know, I'm okay that I saw this movie. It's fine.
So I saw a tweet where somebody said that they went to go use their MoviePass card to go see Skyscraper, and they were charged a $4.50 surcharge.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no,
oh,
no.
Oh, no, no, no. You're charging them almost half of what the membership fee is to MoviePass.
To see this?
To see Skyscraper.
Okay, MoviePass. Here's a rule you need to institute immediately. If a movie on Rotten Tomatoes is less than 60%, no surcharge. You can't 50. Let's go 50. If it's less than 50, no surcharge. You can't do it.
But that aside, he also screen printed from Fandango to show the number of available seats at the time that he wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
And there were only 4 seats already taken.
Only 4 seats taken?
Taken.
Oh.
So he was still getting charged a surcharge, but yet nobody was seeing the movie in the first place.
So what you're saying is we both made the right decision to get rid of.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Cause I mean, with AMC A-List, we pay like what, $10 more a month, but if they're doing all these surcharges for empty theaters, then you're going to end up paying that anyway.
Yep.
Over the course of a month.
Yep.
Especially when you're seeing whatever movie comes out that weekend like we are.
Wow, this conversation just became more interesting than the movie that we're talking about.
Well, I mean, it's a fine throwaway. It's, you know, it's just a movie I'm seeing this week on my AMC A-List. Don't any of you out there pay to see this movie. Don't go out of your way to pay to see this movie. It's not worth it. I don't even care if, the charisma of Dwayne Johnson does not make it worth it even.
I'm not even sure that it was completely there.
His charisma is always there. It's how it's utilized. They didn't utilize it well. Like, if you substitute him out with some actor with lesser charisma, so let's say whatever that less talented Hemsworth is.
Liam.
That's the one. Very pretty to look at, but not very charismatic. Mike is swatting at bugs in his house. This place is filthy. But no, if you substitute The Rock with Liam Hemsworth, this movie is worse.
That's true.
Not worse to look at, but definitely worse, you know, actor-wise. Because whenever he's on screen doing things, I'm intrigued. I'm captivated.
Yeah,
he has that swagger about him that makes you interested in him and what he's doing. But again, not utilized the best in this movie at all.
The funny thing is, too, is like if you think about like Die Hard, like Bruce Willis at you know, in that movie, he's supposed to just be kind of like, yeah, he was a cop, but he was kind of like an everyday guy. Whereas like in this movie, to make Dwayne The Rock Johnson feel like he's just kind of a normal guy,
they had to give him a leg.
Yeah, they had to give him a fake leg to bring him down to other
to
people's
make him
level.
Less invincible.
Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, All right. Well, did you do any takes for this movie?
I did takes. Of course I did takes.
You did takes? I did takes.
I did my homework as we were getting ready to do the show.
Is there anything else specifically you'd like to say about this movie?
I'll say, one, I didn't even know Neve Campbell was in it beforehand.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. And I do love how her emotional range really has not evolved at all since the Scream franchise. She reacts the same way when a fire is coming for her in 2018 as she did whenever a murderer was coming for her in 1996. And I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I also appreciate, like, there was a moment where they were, it was towards the beginning of the movie, and she's talking to The Rock, and I was thinking, you know, if I was Neve Campbell, I'd be very flattered that a casting director would be like, yeah, you're a believable spouse of this mega mountain hunk.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I'd be like, oh, really? You think I could be his wife? Oh. Like, if someone cast me as, like, you know.
Well, they met in such unique circumstances.
If someone cast me as like Chris Hemsworth's husband, I'd be like, really? Me? Okay. I feel like she would have to feel, I feel like anyone who's cast is like the Rock's spouse has to be like, oh my gosh, thank you so much, that's so sweet.
Do you think there's any woman that could be cast that wouldn't feel that way, that was like, I mean, like
me and drag?
I totally deserve this.
Hey, Dwayne, we gotta get out of the building. That's not my lady voice. I don't know why I did that. That was just. I also, another thought about this movie is just how underwhelming the villains were. They were bad. They were really bad. I mean, that's another thing that distinguishes Die Hard. I mean, Die Hard had what's his face?
Oh, yeah.
Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Great actor.
Hans Gruber.
Again, like, in that movie, you give that role to a lesser actor, it's not great.
Right.
You give it to Alan Rickman, it's amazing. This movie, there's no charisma in the villain. It's really not great. Really bad.
Yeah.
Really flat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So... but I really did like some of the action set pieces. I will say that the crane.
Oh, the crane was cool. And the building itself was super cool.
I did like the design of the building. You don't really get much of a sense of it from the previews, but the sense of the building itself was kind of cool. As someone who is very afraid of heights and who would be mortified in that situation, I don't think they did a good job, except for maybe the crane scene, of giving you a sense of just how high up.
Yeah.
Like, for someone like me who's terrified of heights, this movie should have been horrifying.
Well, like when he was hanging outside from that rope, that was a little bit, I mean, you, when he's
a
like
little
swinging there, but
even then, I feel like the director made some choices with how he shot that took away some of the scale,
yeah,
of how high up he was.
Like something flew out the window. Like if they had followed it somewhat,
do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or even like one of the henchmen falling out of the building and then following him down, you know,
yeah. Or at least like halfway and then cut to the ground and see him fall and just kind of like see what.
Right. They don't really give you a good sense of exactly how high up they are.
Of course, somebody falls from that height, you'd have to rate it R to see what really happened.
Or the movie would become much longer because it would take so long to fall that far. But whatever. I do feel like they didn't do a good job shooting the movie in a way to give you that sense of, ooh, this is
right.
Really high up. Very scary stuff here, you know? Yeah. So,
well, I will say that. So this movie was, I'm pretty sure this was on one of my least anticipated.
I think it was.
And
I think you're right.
Because I mentioned something about having Johnson fatigue.
I can't relate. Cannot relate.
Yeah. I really can't either. But,
yeah.
But, But this movie pretty much lived up to my expectation.
Or lived down to them.
Or lived down to my expectation. Yeah. Anyway, so I have some takes too. So if if you're ready to get into that.
Let's do it. Let's do some takes.
One. So my gayest.
Stop talking about this. I know, right? Let's move on. Okay.
Gayest take is just that rock hard body.
Oh my God. Cool.
You?
Actually, my gayest take. I talked about being underwhelmed by the villain. I wish the main villain, and I kind of thought it was going to be, was Ben, his pal, who turned on him. But then he just kind of ended up being a throwaway person. And my gayest take is, on a purely visual level, I would have enjoyed watching him for more of the movie. I thought he was very attractive, even with part of his face charred off a little bit. I still thought he was quite a handsome fella and would have loved to watch him be the villain of the movie.
Actually, yeah, that's I agree. But
and why fight like the Rock without taking your shirt off?
Well, duh. But do you feel like they kind of cheapened the like the makeup effects and stuff? Like wouldn't it have been a little cooler if they'd like made his face a little more gruesome?
No, I thought they should have made his face a little less gruesome and made his clothing a little less on him.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's just say I wish they had gone for a very hard R for this movie, Mike.
Bing.
The hardest R.
The hardest. Rock hardest
R. Stop. But yeah, that's my gayest take.
Okay. Let's hear your shadiest take.
My shadiest take is
the movie.
I did not care if his family lived or died.
Damn.
I was like, okay, cool. I wasn't really invested. I thought, I also thought it was kind of cheap to get his half his family out super early. You know, Nev and the son escaped very quickly. It seemed like a little too easily.
You weren't touched by the daddy and daughter are going to go out together. And I'm so sorry.
Well, and then my other shadiest take, I guess, would be you want to make this movie interesting. So it's this skyscraper that has the potential. It appeared to house thousands of people, and it all of a sudden it's on fire and ablaze, yet there's a dozen or less people in the building. So the sense of danger was very low, I felt like. Whereas why write it to where no one's in the building? Make a movie about this huge skyscraper being on fire full of people. Then it becomes so much more interesting because the stakes are so much higher because there's all these people.
Well, they had mentioned earlier in the movie that the residential area wasn't open yet.
I know. What I'm saying is I wish they hadn't changed that part of the movie.
Right.
Change it. Have everyone in the building and maybe say, okay, we shouldn't have found all these people in the building. We're just now doing maybe they were just a little sloppy with how they did the open.
I gotcha.
You know, and they still had all these people and they're doing a security, overlook or whatever they want to call it. I don't know. Yeah. But, and then everything happens. That's a much more interesting movie because then you have all these people stuck in this fiery building instead of.
Then you would have had people jumping out.
Instead of some very uninteresting characters. And, I guess there are some. You want to avoid images that maybe conjure up things like 9/11 and real things that happen that can be very traumatizing for people for very understandable reasons. You don't want to be insensitive. But still, I fully thought that's what this movie was going to be. I was really confused at the beginning of it. I was like, wait, so this whole movie is going to be about this huge skyscraper, the biggest in the world, that nobody is in.
Right. Yeah.
So the stakes are literally almost nothing, except for this one family that is very uninteresting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They obviously, their hope was that The Rock would make it interesting.
He did. He made it more interesting than it would have been without him. He did not make it interesting enough to be a good movie, yeah, for sure.
Well, my shadiest take is, how is it that someone builds a building?
You always get super technical. I know, right?
I'm gonna
do it.
That's so advanced that somebody could possibly hack the system with an iPad.
They didn't hack it with an iPad. That was
I know, but they got The Rock to look at it, and then all of a sudden they have access to everything that controls that building in an iPad, and nobody had It's that kind of shit, though, that when I watch a movie that my mind goes to.
Your brain nugget gets all extra crispy.
Like, how they gonna do that with a damn Kindle Fire?
Okay, calm down, Larry the Cable Guy.
Yep.
Stop.
Get her done. No.
You slayed. I mean, Larry the Cable Guy now.
Larry the Cable Guy, he slayed. He wasn't even in it, but he slayed.
Okay, I do not know how to say this person's name. But this is another person who was a villain who I enjoyed. Hannah Quinlivan? Quinlivan? I don't know. She was the one with the short hair who Nev Campbell fought at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I actually kind of liked her. I thought I was very compelled whenever she was on screen. I wanted more of her. Why bring her into things and not give her a bigger role than to just break into the Kindle Fire? That literally, I felt like, was her role.
You know what would have been a good role for her? Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, did you hear ScarJo?
Yeah, she backed out. Yeah,
because she listens to the show. Right. She heard what I had to say and what you had to say, and she said, "You know what? No." So, Mike, we've made a difference.
Those real gay guys are right.
Exactly, we made a difference. So Scarlett Johansson isn't going to be a trans man anymore.
That's good.
She will only play other races, not other genders, from right now on.
Right. She backed out of this so she could take that Harriet Tubman role.
No, good for her, though. I'm glad she responded.
You know, if she genuinely took something away from that, and you know, then absolutely good for her.
You know what? I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. Because,
oh, me too.
Yeah. I mean, she could have ignored all of that. But
and she apologized for the what she said as far as, like, go check with Jeffrey Tambor's people and stuff, like, you know, she realized that was insensitive, and
good for her.
I'll take her at her word.
She slays that story.
Yeah,
for sure.
So for me, I said Nev Campbell.
Try again.
So for me, I said Nev Campbell.
Yeah.
I liked that they didn't portray her as like a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
That, I mean, earlier in the movie, you see that she was in the military as well. But, you know, I like that, that they made her character somebody that could, you know, handle her own. And I think if there's anything in this movie that makes sense, is that a woman like that would be the kind of woman that would need to be with a character like The Rock's in that movie.
Yeah. But
okay, tear it down.
There was the moment where she had to walk across that board and they cut to her feet. And what was she wearing?
Oh, shit. Was she in heels?
She was.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
And I was like, okay, you were leaving your apartment. You knew that you were fighting this blaze and you didn't think to change into some flats. Come on, Nev. You were trained in the military. You knew better. You knew better. Come on, Nev.
I take it all back.
You were in four screams.
She's now my no, ma'am.
Yep. She Bryce Dallas Howard, this one.
Come on, Sydney. All right. I guess, speaking of No Ma'am, who is yours?
Another one I do not know how to pronounce, but Roland. Okay, so his last name is M-O-L-L-E-R, but the O has, did you notice in the credits, the O has like a little slash through it? I don't know how to pronounce that. What is that? What do you do with that?
Molière?
I'm not even going to try. But he was the main villain, Botha. But he was so boring. I mean, he really did feel like that, like, side henchman, but for some reason was the main bad guy. Yeah. And I did not, I just, he was, had no charisma, no screen presence, nothing.
See, now, I actually liked him better than the person that I said. And just because, in some ways, he was kind of cute. In that, like, scary henchman kind of way. But my No Ma'am was it was Noah Taylor, Mr. Pierce. He was like the slimy inside man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just like, why is there always a fucking slimy inside man? And he was just...
I say that every Saturday night. Same.
You'd be complaining if they weren't slimy.
Well, you need the right amount of slime, for sure. Otherwise, you're just playing with fire.
That's hot. Yeah, so... I don't know. That character actually bothered me more than your character.
Yeah, I'm glad he had a very quick death.
Yeah.
Just kind of came.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, he's dead now. Good.
Just great. Like the slimy, other slimy guys.
Yeah.
Just kind of came.
Okay. Are we done with this?
Let's rate it real quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
1.5 reels.
Whoa. That's your lowest rating ever.
Ever. This is the first time I've gone below 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
How's it feel?
It's a little liberating, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let that hate in your heart, Mike.
I know. I just...
Welcome. Welcome to the dark side.
Thank you.
I didn't go that low. Maybe I should have. Maybe I should have given it that.
Well,
I just
thought it was just too generic.
Truly, if it didn't have The Rock in it, because I thought he just brings his natural charisma to it. At the end of the movie, I did not hate my life, so I gave it 2 reels.
Okay,
you know, it's not good at all, but it's not terrible. It's not truly terrible. I can see why someone would want to go see this movie and why they wouldn't gouge their eyes out at the end of it.
When I left the theater thinking my mom would love this movie, I knew I didn't like it.
Yeah. You judge movies the way most people judge their spouses.
I knew my mother wouldn't like him. Yeah. All right.
Let's move on.
Moving on.
Let's get rid of this.
So the second movie that we saw, not together, wasn't a date.
We never see movies together. Ocean's 8 and The Darkest Hour.
The Darkest Hour. That was it.
That's it. That's the list.
Yeah.
Mike frequently invites me to movies.
I really do.
I always have stuff going on.
He always seems to be, air quotes,
busy.
Working.
Oh.
I'd rather see it with somebody I might get lucky with later.
Please. I don't even get guys to finish movies with me. You can't fuck after if they don't even stay for the credits, Mike.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, let's bring that up again.
That's so true.
Yeah. What did we see, Mike?
Hey, Ryan.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you.
Okay. So, fun little side story. I invited a friend to go see this movie with me.
Did he stay?
Well, no.
He didn't come at all.
So, he said, He said, I'm sorry, I can't make it. What's the movie? I said, sorry to bother you. He said, well, geez. I said, no, that's the name of the movie. That actually happened. That's a real story.
Oh, my God. I love that that's immortalized now.
Yeah, so that happened.
Let's, you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay. All right. So you read the synopsis this time.
I'm going to synopsis it?
Yeah. Synopsisize it for us.
Okay. In an alternate present day version of Oakland, telemarketer Cassius Green discovers a magical key to professional success, propelling him into a macabre universe.
That was straight from IMDb.
Well, I am deep
impressed.
Wow.
Deep.
Okay.
Ooh.
So this was a movie I wanted to see based purely on the trailer.
Yeah.
I loved the trailer to this movie, and that's why I saw it. And then I saw it, and wow.
Okay, so again, people, this time we're just talking about the we're spilling it. So,
well, let's give some initial. I want to give some initial.
Okay,
thoughts.
All right. So Ryan says we're going to give some initial thoughts.
Give some
so
initial we're going to do that. Spoil this movie.
Okay. What I will say though, first off, I walked out going, "What the fuck did I just watch?"
Yes, for sure.
But I don't necessarily know that that was a bad thing. But I was just like, "What the fuck did I just watch?"
Yeah. So I will say this. I loved the trailer. It pulled me in. And the trailer gives you nothing about where this movie takes you.
And I think if it had, people would not have gone to see it.
Another thing I will say, this, I said the same about Hereditary. This is a movie that I see a lot of people going to and leaving and hating it. I think a lot of mainstream moviegoers who don't go to a lot of movies, who may just say, oh, this looks interesting, will go and leave and be like, exactly like what you said, what the fuck was this? But be like, I hated that.
Yeah,
I left thinking, wow. Like, I left really pretty high on it, and I've only gotten higher on it since, in terms of I really liked it. I thought it was really good. This movie starts in a very kind of fun, interesting way.
Yeah.
And then takes some turns that are truly strange and kind of funny, kind of morbid, kind of dark, kind of twisted. And it has a lot to say about our society in terms of race, in terms of capitalism, in terms of class structure.
That's the thing that I think that some people aren't grasping onto and getting when they're coming out of this movie, that it has a social message to it.
But it does not write this social message in light tones. It writes it with a hammer. It beats you in the face with it.
It chisels it.
But it does it in a way where it's screaming at you, you need to understand this. And when I first got the movie, I would have rated it a little lower because I was like, it did beat me over the head with it. But as I thought about it and engaged with it intellectually a little bit more since the movie, I thought, but it knew it was doing it that way and it wanted to, and it did it for a reason, because this movie is frustrated that people don't get it,
right?
I think, and I now appreciate why it chose to tell the story the way it did.
Yeah 100%. It took some sinking in, like a day of reflecting on what I saw.
Yeah.
But I think that was on purpose.
Yep, for sure.
Because if you leave a movie like that, getting it 100% right away when you walk out, it's not getting the message through, because it needs you to reflect and think about it.
Yes.
And like, you know, sometimes there's movies where you could swap out an African-American cast for a white cast or vice versa or whatever. I feel like this movie had to be cast exactly the way it was cast for it to work the way that it did.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the cast was phenomenal.
Yeah.
The cast was so great. Had some, I didn't realize some of the big names that were in this movie until I was watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you got Danny Glover, you got Tessa Thompson, you get
Terry
some,
Crews. I mean,
Terry Crews,
we saw him in the
trailer,
but,
Armie Hammer.
Oh, Armie Hammer.
And what is a really interesting role.
Yeah.
In this movie. I really liked.
Much different than Call Me By Your Name.
I really liked him in this movie.
I like then the range that it proves that he's got too. You
oh
know?
My God. Like, oh yeah. He almost was my slay of the movie. He's so good. He's so good in it. In that role. I was not expecting it.
He was definitely the runner up for mine too. And I have a feeling we're going to end up picking the same slay, but we'll see.
I think so. I think we might too. But yeah, and this is a movie that I feel like I could watch 20 times and every time would notice something new, would take away something I hadn't seen or noticed before, would find a new joke that lands, because it truly is a super funny movie too. It has some of the biggest laughs probably of any movie I've seen this year. But I think this was a very welcome movie for this time of year. I would say it's very much like this year's Get Out. If Get Out didn't exist, this movie would have that place. And that is just, it's giving a lot of very blunt, upside the head social commentary that is very smart and nuanced while being very in your face and blunt. But it's also tackling genres in an interesting, fun way. It's not just existing to do that. It also is existing to make you laugh, to make you think, to make you enjoy the movie.
Right. Well, and it's like the trailers make it out to be purely a comedy, but it goes into like having some weird sci-fi elements to it, and
it does.
Fuck,
I can't say much more than that without spoiling some stuff.
Yeah, so
want to get into it?
Let's get into it.
Let's get into. Okay, so you wouldn't think we'd have to say this, but we have to give a spoiler alert for Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah, so here comes, folks.
So sorry to spoil it for you.
We ain't horsing around here.
Nay. Yeah, so let's just dive right into that. What did you think of that?
What the fuck? Holy shit.
I did not see that coming.
Not a goddamn bit. And they hinted to it.
They did. They surely did.
They absolutely hinted to it. And I was going to be really disappointed if, okay, I'm just skipping really far ahead here for a second, but I was going to be disappointed if that movie ended without him starting to change.
I got to be honest, like, I was so into the movie that when it happened at the very end, it hit, like, you never see shit like that happen except in, like, horror movies or Black Mirror or something like that where it has that twist ending. I thought it was a perfect way to end this movie.
Yeah, I just kept waiting for it, and that kind of kept me on my toes a little bit towards the end of that movie because I just kept waiting for it and just waiting for it.
Yeah, it was that. I can't remember a movie that takes that dramatic of a tonal shift.
Right.
It really just turns. And it does not look back on it. It starts out so relatable. I mean, they talk about the, what's the company, the,
Well, there's Regal View, which is the telemarketing firm.
Not Regal View.
And then Worry Free.
Worry Free. They talk about Worry Free. And once you see Worry Free, you're like, okay, this is an alternate kind of reality.
Right.
This is not quite.
This is like if people worked at Walmart and slept there.
It's slightly detached from reality. I see what they're doing here, but there's still a very clear connection to the real world. But once they reveal that they're turning people into horse people, that's when it really is just.
Equisapiens.
I'm sorry to use these non-politically.
Horse terms. People is very derogative.
But which did you know the first one he runs into? That was Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to ask you, I went through and checked out some of the other voices. Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. So the I recognized both of the white voices.
Okay.
That he. So David Cross was his white voice, and then the Mr. Blank, whatever, was Patton Oswalt.
Yeah,
and I had them both pegged.
That's awesome,
and I loved it.
And going back, like, what was the point of his name being Mr. Like, why did they keep beeping out his name?
I think my interpretation of that is that not only had he lost his voice as a black man, but he also had lost
his identity.
When he sold out everything, not just his voice, but like who he was as a person, his name, his identity. He really just became this instrument of this corporation.
Wow, that's deep.
That's my interpretation.
I like it. So Lily James did the voice, the white voice for Detroit, Tessa Thompson's character.
Oh, yeah.
And Rosario Dawson was the elevator voice.
Which I didn't recognize.
I didn't either, but
yeah.
Oh my, I hope you didn't masturbate today. Which that was in the Red Band trailer.
Yeah.
But that was hilarious.
Oh, just everything about this movie, everything from that opening scene where the boss is calling him out for all the things he faked.
Yeah.
To get the job, like the trophy and all that kind of shit. And said, it's just a telemarketing job. Of course you're hired. If anything, this shows you took initiative. I loved that. I thought that was great. From that moment, I was like, I'm in. I love this tone. I love what this movie is doing. And then it goes for an entire half of the movie just like that. And then it completely turns. And I'm like, my brain has to be like, what's going on? What's happening? But then at the end, I was like, oh, it's great. It's awesome. I love it. I love what it did.
I love that it kept me guessing.
Yes. It's not a predictable movie.
That predictable is really not a word that you can.
No. It, and in so many ways, it was just so original. And this was, so the director was
Bootsy Collins or no, that's not his name.
That was Boots Riley.
Boots Riley. Bootsy Collins is, he was in the Funkadelic.
first directorial debut.
Yeah. But he's a musician though too, though. He's done some soundtracks and stuff like that.
And I thought this was, I mean, again, not to compare it just to Get Out, but
it's hard not to though.
Just in how smart it does what it does.
Yeah.
I think. Both movies approach how they're critiquing society in very different ways, but it's just the fact that it's two directorial debuts with such a strong, smart, inventive, non-predictable voice that brings out incredible performances from all the actors just blew me away.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing too, and I hope this comes out right. As a Caucasian male in the United States, I hope more African-American directors make movies like this, because I like to think that I'm a little bit, you know, especially being a gay person in the United States too, I like to feel like I'm a little bit more aware of things that need to be changed. But man, movies like this and Get Out, they need to be made.
Yeah. Well, I think if anything, it points a spotlight at a perspective that just hasn't been given its proper light of day.
Yeah.
I hope this movie gets more attention and more people see it, because it's so great. And if anything, I'm sad it came out in the middle of the summer, because it really feels like it either should have come out earlier in the year, like around the time of Get Out would have came out.
Yeah. Or like in October or November.
Exactly. Just out of nowhere. I think, unfortunately, I worry it's going to just get lost in the middle of
blockbuster season.
Yeah. Ant-Man and Skyscraper and Mission Impossible is about to come out and all these other things, and no one's going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm really glad you chose to see it and we can talk about it, because I really love this movie. I thought it was great, and I want to see more movies like this. For sure. Although I will fully admit, I think that there are so many people who go to this movie expecting it to just be what they saw in the trailer and leave completely hating it, because
it's not an entire movie of the funny telemarketing scenes where he drops into the house that he's talking to.
Right.
Which I loved that, by the way.
Exactly. That's another example of just that creativity in how you tell a story.
But like, if it were like an Office Space type movie that did that kind of thing, like that could have still been a good movie where that kind of thing was done throughout the movie. But then, you know, you also have the gang of friends getting together after work and stuff like that. Like that could have still worked as just a workplace comedy.
Yeah, but yes, for sure. What I think this movie does, though, is it has some of the strongest imagery that I think we will see on screen this year. So that things like that, that gag of him falling through the ground and being in the home of whoever he's talking to when he's a telemarketer. And then the scene that really sticks out to me, that is really the director, I think, screaming at the audience, this is what being black is like, is when they're at the mansion and
I know where you're going. Yeah.
Armie Hammer is talking to Cassius and he says, tell us a story about what it was like growing up in the streets. And it's a room full of white people looking at this one black guy. It's like, tell us what it was like, you know, being around, raised around gangs and stuff like that. And then he's like, oh, you must know how to rap. And then this entire room of white people is just screaming rap at this black man who is there because he has done a good job at work. He has proven himself successful. He's really good at his job and what he does. And all they want him to do is rap.
Is be ghetto.
And
for their entertainment.
That was just so striking. Yep. And so just in your face, but in the right way.
And of course, you know, he says he can't, and he's like trying, you know, my name is Cassius, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't get their attention until he starts angrily yelling out the N-word.
Yeah.
And
because all they want is the permission to be a part of what they think the black experience is.
Really kind of reflects on all the white people who listen to rap that think it's okay to them to say that because they're just singing the lyrics or whatever.
Yes. Yes. That. So such vivid imagery to communicate something that I think is more everyday than we like to believe.
Yeah.
For sure. Especially we white people. I thought that was a really creative and smart way to purvey an aspect of the black experience.
Yeah.
Especially in a predominantly white world.
Which is ever changing.
Yet ever present.
Good point.
So, yes. Can we do takes? Do you want to do takes or do you have more?
Yeah, I think I'm ready to do takes. So, one of my shadiest take.
You're skipping all over? Just going over the gayest take? Oh. Straight to shadiest takes?
Oh, fuck. Fuck, I didn't write down a gayest take.
That's fine. I got one that can be inclusive of both of us.
Okay.
So.
Is it horse dick?
It's not horse dick. But this movie shows a lot of horse dick.
Shows a lot of horse dick.
If you had told me going into this movie, I would have seen horse dick. so much of it.
People horse dick.
Equisapien.
Equisapien.
Who's the speciest now? Okay. So in the movie, there are telemarketing, and they explore this notion of using their white voice.
Uh-huh.
I am very conscious of my very gay voice, especially after listening to the show. So I was going to open up a conversation with you if we had to... had to do a straight voice, but like in the movie, instead of actually doing the voice, it came out as some actor's straight voice. Who would be your straight voice, Mike? Do you want me to get mine first?
Yes, please.
My straight voice would be Chris Hemsworth. I wish when I opened my mouth...
You had an accent.
If I can't have the body of Chris Hemsworth, I at least want that voice that's just so yummy coming out of my mouth hole. I think that would be great.
How would it sound?
I can't do it. let's tee up some Thor and you can find out.
Who would be my voice?
Your straight voice.
My straight voice. I mean, I kind of think I've already got one.
Boo.
No, that's not true at all, actually. Even when I thought I was straight, I always thought I had a gay sounding voice. Would be my straight voice.
Oh, you're bordering on thinking too hard about this.
I am. You're right. Paul Rudd.
There's some recency bias there.
No. scratch that. Ryan Reynolds. Because there's that hint of Canadian in it. And no, scratch that too.
Oh my God, Mike.
Who would be my straight voice? Ryan Reynolds.
Okay. We're just going to go with Ryan Reynolds because you've thought for about 30 minutes on this and you've come up with two names. One of those names twice.
Yeah.
So yeah.
We're going to go with Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
I think people would swoon over that voice.
I mean, it's not the first time you've wanted to be a Ryan, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my gayest take.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just echo yours.
Okay. Great.
So did you hear that?
Yeah. Your mask voice. Your super straight voice. Yeah, I heard it.
Oh shit. I am gay.
Close your purse, Tristine.
Out of my penny bag. Okay. So this is what I was going to get ready to start saying.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So my shadiest take, when I wrote this, I was still kind of fresh out of the movie and I decided not to change it. But I've kind of had a somewhat of a change of heart since seeing the movie.
Okay.
Or, you know, after letting it kind of sink in. But initially my shadiest take was Equisapiens, fucking horse people. What the fuck? Because it took a little while for that to sink in, really, what they were trying to get through there.
Yeah.
But I decided, you know what? I'm going to leave it as my shadiest take because I think that there are legit people going to come out of this movie. And that being the thing that they walk away with going, I hate that, and not knowing why.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is a very jarring thing. It really turns this movie on its head. And there are a lot of movie-going audiences that don't want to feel uncomfortable and want to know what they're getting themselves into when they go to a movie. And this movie does not give you that. And I love that. I really do. Yeah. I'm glad you left that in there.
Good. Thank you. Yeah. What's yours?
My shadiest take. Okay. I get that this is trying to beat us over the head with its symbolism and what it's trying to tell us. But really, the name Cassius Green. Cash is green. They even like his name. They call him Cash.
Right.
So Cash Green. I think that's a little too on the nose.
A little too on the money?
It's just, man. That's just a... And again, that's such a nitpick, but right. Cassius Green really, like, should be a drag name. It should be a drag king name.
There we go.
There you go.
There we go.
I thought that was just a little too on the nose. Like, okay, I get that you're not trying to be subtle, but really.
Yeah.
Cassius Green. Okay.
I like it.
Anyway. Who slayed this movie for you?
I'm telling you, Tessa Thompson, man.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe we do have different ones.
We do.
Okay. First of all, I love her.
Yeah.
I loved her in this. I loved her in Thor. I loved her in Annihilation. She is just awesome.
She's doing some really interesting things.
Yeah.
All over the board.
And I loved her shirt. The future is female ejaculation.
So, I don't know if you got this sense, but I could sense every time she was on screen and she had new earrings or a new shirt, right. Everyone was trying to see what the message was, and that was so cool. I loved that.
And in fact, yeah, all of her earrings was one of my notes when she had those like penis earrings.
Yes.
And the earrings that straight up had messages on, I loved her, and I loved how she stuck to her guns too, as far as like, man, you're not doing the right thing anymore. So I'm moving on. And, I thought she was a great character.
Yeah.
And she played it so well.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think there was a single character who wasn't great in this. I think a lot of the side characters really stole the show. I mean, she's kind of not a side character necessarily, but definitely, you know.
I mean, I guess she could be considered the female lead.
I will say my favorite side character, though, was, oh my gosh, who's that kind of motivational manager lady?
Oh, yeah.
And her last name is spelled like debauchery, but yeah. She goes like, Debauchery or whatever, I don't know. And he goes, "Isn't that spelled debauchery?" She was so funny and so great. Armie Hammer, he had a fairly small role, but so impactful and great. But I mean, you gotta give it to Lakeith Stanfield, the main character.
Yeah.
I mean, being surrounded by so much talent, he still managed to really carry the movie. The movie completely relies on him and his performance, and the fact that he still was so central and did such a great job, surrounded by people giving amazing performances. Mm-hmm. I love to give my slay to a side character who really stands out, but man, I thought he was so good. Like, best actor Oscar nomination good.
And I hope that this movie, being where it is in the year, doesn't get overlooked.
I really think it will. I have that feeling too,
but
maybe Golden Globes, if they consider it a comedy, maybe. But I don't think this movie is going to get the love I really think it deserves.
I think it'll probably pick up an MTV movie award.
That's truly sad. But for real, I think this movie...
Let's take solace in knowing it won't get a Razzie.
It sure won't. It's so... Ugh, I love this movie. Okay. And the more I think about it, the more I love it. That's the truth.
Yeah, unlike Skyscraper... I am looking forward to seeing this one again, just to see, like you said earlier, what else I can take from it that I missed that initial time through. Yeah.
So No Ma'am?
No Ma'am, to me, goes to the office manager, not the guy that hired him, and not the one, but the one that had like the tattoos on his face and stuff like that. That character to me was just a little... over the top, even for this movie.
Well, what's funny is he was almost mine as well.
Really?
But then I thought about that speech he gave.
Okay.
You know which one I'm talking about. And that speech alone, I was like, that makes it worth it. Okay. I'm fine with him.
I mean, you know, this is another one of those movies where you have such a good cast that if you got to pick somebody out to be a no man,
it's nitpicking.
Yeah. And I liked everybody else better, and I disliked more of his character than I did like it. Yeah. So.
And I'll say that was almost mine, but at the end of the day, I was like, I still really liked him. I'm not going to give a no, ma'am.
I didn't give one at all.
I didn't want to, just because I don't want to give the impression that there's any reason not to see this movie. I really enjoyed it that much. I really did.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Great. Well, then let's go ahead and give our ratings.
Give our ratings. What did you rate it?
I gave it 3 reels.
Okay.
With the caveat that my rating could go up after another viewing.
Sure.
I'm still sticking with that initial what the fuck, and that it took me a while for it to kind of sink in.
What very it was, jarring.
Yeah, it really is. But I thoroughly give it the option that, you know, I'm paying 3 up front, but with the option of
you're leaving that door open.
I'm leaving that door open.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally feel you, because going out of this movie, I go back to Hereditary. I talked about that movie and how I gave it 3.5 reels. Even though I loved the movie and I thought it was great, I could see how it cannot be accessible to some audiences. And for that reason, I gave it 3.5. So initially, I was kind of thinking the same about this movie. The difference is I'm okay with it. I'm okay with you leaving Hereditary and being like, that's just not for me. I think leaving this movie, I need you to be uncomfortable with it, and I need you to be okay with that. And if you're not, then you can go fuck yourself. So because of that, I'm upgrading it to a 4.
Wow.
It really is. It's a 4 reels for me. I think this movie is unique and different and important. And you will leave this movie, listeners, if you haven't seen it yet, why are you listening to this late in it? We spoiled everything, but you will leave this movie truly confused, possibly, and thinking, what the hell did I just watch? And I think it's okay to leave movies feeling like that. I love when I leave a movie feeling like that. I love when a movie catches me off guard. And I thought that this was just really great. And I think of all the movies I see in 2018, this will definitely be an experience that sticks with me for sure.
Well, let's go ahead and dish out some recommendations.
Oh, yes. Let's do it.
Right. Do you... you just talk a bunch. I'll give mine first.
Yeah, you give yours first.
Yeah. Okay.
Gay voice first.
So, mine is a documentary, believe it or not.
Documentary.
Yeah, documentary. That was shown at Sundance. And it is...
you went to Sundance without me?
Anyway, but it's currently on HBO. And it's called Believer. Have you heard of this?
I have. It's got the Imagine Dragons guy, right?
Yeah. So so it's about Dan Reynolds, the lead singer of Imagine Dragons, and his struggles with his Mormon beliefs and his stance on gay rights within the church.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, my ex-wife told me about this documentary.
Ew.
And said, you should see this. And, so to get a recommendation from your ex-wife and then to really enjoy, but you know, given that, you know, my husband is an ex-Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And
what an interesting life you lead.
I know, right? Oh, you don't know the half of it.
I'm just a very traditional homosexual. You've found a journey.
Yeah. And so one of the things though about the within the documentary then is it also features Tyler Glenn, who's the singer of the band The Neon Trees.
Okay.
And he is also Mormon, but he is out and gay.
Okay.
And so a big part of the documentary is about the two of them basically forming a festival called the Love Loud Festival that they put together and they held in Utah, in Salt Lake.
Nice.
To raise awareness and raise money to go for, you know, they talk a lot about the suicide rate in Utah is very high among teens. And a lot of that has to do with not only gay, but also straight Mormon teenagers that are excommunicated from the church just because they had sex or,
right,
you know, whatever. And it just, it was just amazing to watch this and hear so many things that sound familiar to stories that I've heard.
For sure.
Very, very, very powerful. And it sounds like, from what they were saying at the end of the documentary, they plan on, you know, they've done this festival once, but they plan on, continuing it and keeping it going in Utah. Basically they said until it's not needed.
Well, it's very timely for you to watch that considering you're about to go to Utah.
You're right. I'm a few days away from driving out to Utah. Yeah.
No festival while you're there?
No festival while I'm there. Yeah. Hmm. Just lots of sightseeing and a lake house and my husband's Mormon family.
Sounds truly wonderful. Well, great recommendation, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
So mine is also related to some future travels that I have coming up.
Okay.
So I was hanging out with a couple friends on the 4th of July who gave me they recommended this to me. And so I now am recommending it to all of you. So it is a documentary series as well about what it is like to be gay. And it's called Gaycation.
Oh.
And it's hosted by Ellen Page.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. She was Juno. She was in the X-Men movies.
Is this is a TV series, right?
Yes. And
I've seen some of these.
So it's got Ellen Page and her friend Ian Daniel. It's on Hulu right now. It was originally on Vice. There's only a couple seasons of it. But each episode, they go to a different country and basically explore what it is like being LGBT in that country. I've seen a few of the episodes so far. I want to watch the France episode because I'm getting ready in just a couple weeks to go to Paris. Yeah. It's my first time outside the country. I'm very nervous. I've already texted my brother and told him that he is responsible for being the Liam Neeson if I ever get taken while I'm away.
Does he have an exceptional set of skills?
No. But... No, he's a cool guy. But no, this show is really interesting. It's really great. It's really eye-opening about what it is like to be LGBT in different cultures and different societies. Some of the really powerful moments that stand out to me that I've seen so far. They go to Brazil, which is a country I've actually wanted to visit because I took Portuguese in college. And they interview this cop who admits to and enjoys killing gay people just because they're gay.
Jesus.
Yeah. And it is very jarring to hear someone talk about doing that because that's what they want to do. They go to Jamaica, which is a country I feel like as a society pictures being very laid back and very casual, but a country that is very hostile towards LGBT people. And they talk to some, they go to this little kind of commune of homeless LGBT people. And you find out that they are getting kicked out of this little place that they live in. yeah, it's just, it's very powerful, very interesting. It's a good show. It's really, but it's not all negative. It's not all really covering sad things about how terrible it is to be gay in places that aren't America. It also, one episode, they go to Japan and there are, they explore some of the ways that parts of Japan cater to kind of some niche parts of the LGBT community. So they go to this bar where it's all men who enjoy dressing as women.
The lady boys.
So that's the entire bar. It's all men dressed as women. And it's really interesting. It's just, it's fascinating to see just how different cultures experience and portray their sexuality.
Yeah.
And very interesting to me, considering I'm about to leave the comfort of being in my country for the first time ever, to go to Paris and see what it's like there, which, I mean, luckily I feel like Paris is probably one of the more liberal, open cities that I could go to, but I'm still truly terrified. If for no other reason than uncut penis is kind of scary.
I've yet to experience that.
Really?
Yeah.
Paris or uncut dick?
Both.
Oh, I'm very much a whore. So I have experienced the uncut penis. I've just never had it with an accent.
Weird story though. True story. My dad was uncut. And I always found it weird that my parents would choose to circumcise their sons when he wasn't.
I mean, it's,
I mean, I'm glad.
It's a hygienic thing.
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I don't know what my life would be like differently if,
see, you don't know,
I had that little bit extra skin. So if you've listened to the Real Gay Movie Show and wondered whether or not the co-hosts were circumcised, now you know.
Now you know.
Both cut.
The weird things we bring up in the course of a conversation.
Cut it out. I did it. I did the thing.
You did
it. I did
it.
The did thing it. That you do, where you say words that are corny and terrible.
But this whole conversation, I'm going to leave it uncut.
I recommend Gaycation. It's great. It's not very many episodes, just about like 10 of them. They made it this in like 2015 and 2016 and stopped for some reason. I don't know why. It's a great show.
Yeah, I watched some of them when they were on Vice.
Yeah, I'm really excited to watch the France episode. I've been putting that one off. And they actually have done a couple episodes in the United States. They did a Deep South one, which I am very nervous to watch because that's, ooh, where I'm from. And I wonder how much of that they captured. Yeah, so very excited. Love that. All Gaycation.
Right. Gaycation. All right. Well, our real friends, if you are out there and you're listening.
If you're out there anymore, so sorry. We apologize profusely.
Absolutely. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Real Gay, Instagram at Real Gay Movie Show. Like our page on Facebook, wherever you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google, or what's that new one? Spotify.
What's that thing the kids are listening to these days?
That Spotify-ish thing. Make sure you subscribe. Give us some feedback.
Listen to us on the spot, iffy.
You can also reach us at realgaymovieshow@gmail.com.
That's an email address. It's like the real mail, but through a computer.
All right. So that's it for this week. Have a real gay day.
Bye, everybody.